everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of Top of the Card right here on Ad Free Shows and the Ad Free Shows YouTube. I am referee Brandon Toll, and I have a very special guest as we are going to be talking a very hot topic within the wrestling card industry. Basically, the trash can got set, or the dumpster got set on fire yesterday afternoon as WWE filed lawsuit against Panini. In regards to the trading card license, Panini responded and filed their own countersuit and injunction, and it is burning the house down. So to talk about all of this and to really kind of go in depth in terms of the legalese with it, I have someone who I have, we've been casual Twitter friends for a couple of years now, actually. He's a very respected voice from the legal end of hobby Twitter as a whole, not just wrestling cards, but sports as well. He specializes in legal sports card issues. If there's any kind of a legal filing or any kind of a lawsuit or anything going on, he's going to be talking about it, breaking it down for us. He is an actual practicing attorney as well, if I'm not mistaken, right? Paul Lesko. Yep. Paul, welcome. Welcome to Top of the Card. Thank you so much for taking the time out with me. This has been an absolute dumpster fire the past 18 hours.
No, thanks for having me on. And it's, it's funny that it took us this long to actually finally get together since we're just, down the road from each other. So,
yeah, it's weird. Like we've talked and we've commented and we back and forth with this. And I think this is really the first time that both of our worlds kind of collided together, given what happened with Panini and WWE and, Fanatics in the background, obviously. Some people think that they could be the ones pulling the strings with this. We'll get into all of this. So let's just kind of lay the landscape here. Panini has had the WWE license since March. I think it's March 1 of last year. Prism was the first release of it. They were scheduled to have it, if I'm not mistaken, it's 2025. I think we had one more year of it through the end of 2024. And then Fanatics, it was already widely known, Fanatics/Tops was going to be taking over the license again, starting in 2025. Moving forward, that was announced literally like 3 days after Panini announced they were getting the license. Like,
yeah, somebody, 2026 actually. Because Panini is supposed to have it through 2025.
So. Oh wow! So we had it another year. Okay, so that's my earth. That so yeah, supposed to have another 2 years worth of products. So from my end as a collector and being in the wrestling industry, I can say for myself that the wrestling hobby has basically it's that rocket ship that we saw in the other sports during the pandemic and before the pandemic, realistically 2019 into probably early 2020. And we're seeing that delayed a couple of years within the wrestling industry. And Panini has really been the catalyst to that with what they have brought to the table with their signature products, with Prism, with Select last year for me was really, I think, the jumping off point as to the popularity of the wrestling hobby. So, there was a lot of buzz. Everybody's been ripping Select like a monster. I've ripped a ton of Select myself to boot with it. And we were looking forward to, which we may not get now at this point, Elite WWE for the first time coming up next month to replace NXT 2.0. But yesterday, the proverbial dumpster got set on fire at about 4 o'clock Central Time, so 5 Eastern yesterday, with the start of these multiple filings from Panini. So I've read through it, but I wanted to bring you on as you are the legalese man. You have a great way from Twitter. And by the way, if you are not following Paul on Twitter, please go follow him at Paul_Lesko, L-E-S-K-O. He did a great job at trying to break down, or at least a cursory reading of the filings that came down from Panini and from WWE yesterday in regards to this whole situation, to kind of lay the landscape of what is going to be coming and is most likely, I think, going to be a protracted legal battle. So we kind of laid the groundwork, Paul. Let's just kind of dig in. The floor is yours. Just help break this down. What happened yesterday, in terms of basically who threw the match in the dumpster and started this fire, and who threw gasoline on the fire?
Yeah. So the story appears to, while we just learned about it yesterday, it looks like it started about 2 weeks ago when WWE sent Panini a termination letter, saying that Panini was in violation, in breach of the contract. And so 2 weeks later, we get these lawsuits, these competing lawsuits that were filed. WWE sued Panini and they're seeking a temporary restraining order and an injunction. We don't know much about that lawsuit because WWE asked to file that lawsuit under seal. But we do know that by filing for a TRO and a preliminary injunction, they're seeking to shut down, most likely seeking to shut down any future products from Panini. Panini also filed kind of the flip side lawsuit where they want the judge to say, hey, you know, here's the contract. We are not in breach of the contract. Tell WWE we're not in breach of the contract. And then also, you know, tell WWE that they have to go forward and live by the terms of this contract, and it has to keep going on. In the letter that WWE sent to Panini, we only get Panini's characterization of the letter. They didn't attach it. Hopefully that letter will come out. But also in that letter, WWE said that they want $5.625 million from Panini, which would be the minimum royalty for the remainder of the contract. And, you know, Panini's complaint is filed in open court. It tells a pretty good story of, you know, at least their version of it. And, you know, it's really the theme of it is, hey, we're in shock. You know, we've been working with them for over a year. They've never complained about anything until we received this letter. In fact, they praised us saying, hey, we tripled, you know, sales compared to what had happened beforehand. So it looks like, according to Panini's summary of the letter, that WWE says that Panini was supposed to, in the contract, create a, you know, some type of trading card game or something along those lines, and also have digital cards, and accuse Panini of not following through on either of those. And Panini's response was, digital cards, we have released digital cards. That's, you know, that's out there. Panini Instant. We've we've got stuff that's out there. For the trading card games, and this is going to turn on what does the contract actually say? We don't know it. But for trading card games, Panini says, hey, we actually, at conventions, we play pack wars with the WWE cards, and that should meet the obligations that are required under the contract. Now, pack wars, as I understand it, you know, from reading everything, I don't think Panini has a product called pack wars. I don't think they have a TCG type product that's out there. But depending on the wording that's used in the contract, that might meet what the contract says. If it just says you're supposed to exploit the licenses through use of games or, you know, trading card games or something like that, you know, that's a vague enough term that, you know, pack wars might meet it. Excuse me. But that seems to be, you know, what Panini says WWE said, why they that Panini was in breach of the contract was because there wasn't a digital product. There wasn't fully exploited digital product, maybe a better way to say it. And there wasn't full exploitation of a TCG type game.
Yeah, that's wildly interesting. I mean, maybe you can kind of expound on this, because when we think of TCG, or at least when I think of TCG, I think of like Pokemon, basically Magic the Gathering. Those are the basically the big two as well. And I mean, you know, from my end of working in a hobby shop, those are actually termed TCG, but they are collected the same way as sports cards are. So do you think the argument could be made that basically just like me ripping, and I've got it, like, let's say in theory, and I just happen to have this right here, let's say I decide to rip a box of, you know, of 2022 debut hobby Prism right here. Let's say what's not to say that this is a TCG, because of the fact that there's two autos a box on average, parallels. What's not to say that ripping a just selling these would quantify as a TCG, given that if you look at the term TCG, at least from what the hobbyists know, is like Pokemon and Magic, and they are traded and collected exactly the same. And, you know, when it comes to buying and selling, valuation, the whole schmear, what's not to say that, you know, the hobby boxes Select, Panini, Impeccable, Immaculate, all the releases we've had in the past 18 months doesn't qualify as a TCG in its own right.
Yeah. I think, you know, first, you know, again, we haven't seen the contract, but that'll probably turn on, you know, some definition in the contract. You know, the complaint mentioned that there was a long form contract. They had an initial agreement and then a long form contract. So, you know, that a bunch of lawyers spent 80 hours each putting together a definition for everything there. So it might be something that's defined there. But I think the general understanding, especially when it comes to Panini, is more so a trading cards that can be utilized as a game, you know, like, they had their NBA Monopoly cards that were out, something where you have, you know, statistics and rules on how to use the cards. I think that's probably a better reading of what the games would be. But you know, Panini has put forward an interesting argument there. You know, pack, you know, people have been playing pack wars with cards for a long time, you know,
who's not
they
to say
it's a major, part of their, what they do at conventions. So it's going to depend, you know, are they only supposed to exploit the licenses for games with trading cards, or are they supposed to have released some type of trading card specific game, like a Monopoly for WWE or something like that? And also what's of interest too is, Panini pointed to that the timing is really weird here, because the section that allegedly WWE pointed to was supposed to have been brought within 3 months or within a certain time frame of the contract beginning. And here we are 15 months, maybe even longer than that afterwards. And, you know, not only has Panini not heard, allegedly heard any complaints, but it looks like the time to have raised these objections may have come and gone. So, it'll be interesting. I mean, I really wish we had the letter from WWE. I really wish we had the contract. We'd be better able to connect the dots. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there. And I know a lot of people are wondering, well, what does this mean for the future of our products? And it's going to be hard for us to predict what's going to happen without seeing those documents. But, you know, by moving for a TRO and a PI, a preliminary injunction, WWE must feel pretty strongly about their position, because there's a lot of case law where if you file for a TRO or if you file for a PI and it goes badly in your favor, sometimes you have to pay the other side's attorney's fees. So it'll be a big fight. We'll know quickly. TROs are normally held within the first couple of weeks of filing a lawsuit. So we might actually, you know, right now we're trying to figure it out. We might actually have answers pretty soon.
Okay. Yeah. I hadn't actually thought of that actually, because, you know, a lot of us were, at least from in the wrestling hobby space, we're talking about the long-term implications and not thinking, oh, wait a minute, we may have an answer on this short term. I will say WWE's lawyers, Jerry McDivitt, who is the lead attorney for WWE, has been there, 40 years, 35 years. Like, he's very good at what he does, you know. But I will say WWE has law, and WWE for a long time, and this is just, you know, well, it's not my opinion, that we can, I could actually do the factual legwork on this if I needed to. WWE's had a very good track record in court just based on their location, you know, and exploiting the courts that they use, because they're based out of Stamford, Connecticut. Yeah. And they've got some very favorable judges in that area, and everything rerouting back to there. I think that's why the injunction for the Panini from last night was filed in the Southern District of New York. I think that's the closest federal district to Stanford, being right outside of New York City there.
And that's actually the contract required any lawsuits to be filed had to be filed in the Southern District of New York. So yeah. it's common, you know, when it comes to businesses, there's a couple common courts that are filed in. Southern District of New York is a very busy court for corporate battles.
But it was a court in general. I think we've seen across, even outside of our hobby sphere over the past couple of years. But yeah, so Jerry McDivitt's very good at what he does, but I know also they have definitely run into their fair share of legal pushback. I know there is a continuing litigation going on right now with an independent company called MLW, Major League Wrestling, that is claiming contract tampering. Outright, along with other things. I've read it here and there as it's been kind of gone back and forth, but WWE's tried multiple times to shut it down outright and they've lost. So I used to be able to feel comfortable saying this is just going to get shut down outright. But I mean, yeah, the ability to be able to see what that deal is from Panini. And I find it kind of, I don't know, and get your thoughts on this. I find it kind of, I don't want to say disingenuous, but I look at it in terms of WWE filed everything under seal. Mm-hmm. Panini didn't even bother doing that. They came out with everything up out front. And I don't know if that's a PR move on their end, because you and I both know, as we've been kind of following the other dumpster fires that have been lit over the past few months with the NFLPA situation. And for those who just to kind of summarize real quick for people watching that may not be in the other parts of the hobby space, Fanatics is basically trying to take over the entire hobby outright, like every single portion of it. Working in the hobby, I see it on the front line end, and we're seeing it with the licenses, because basically if they were to run out every contract by 2026 ish, they were going to have every major license, NFL, NBA, MLB, WWE, I think everything short of soccer, hockey, and WWE's competition, AEW, All Elite Wrestling, which is with Upper Deck, that's basically the only things that were not going to be under their umbrella. And they are trying to go after the other portions of the hobby. They're coming for the breakers now with Fanatics Live. They're even trying to look to go after PSA, which I don't know that they're going to be able to do. But they are trying to be the only place. It is a, in my opinion, it is a full on monopoly run here right now. They are trying to put everybody out of business. And that's another animal. We'll touch on it here a little later on. But when I was reading through this yesterday afternoon, I got Fanatics vibes all over this. It seems because with the, and I referencing the NFLPA situation from, what was it, 3-4 weeks ago now, I think was when that kind of all started. Basically, and kind of recap as well, basically the NFLPA basically terminated, they terminated the agreement, basically trying to force Panini to stop making NFL cards. And we're literally coming into the football season right now. It is prime time for football cards. And Panini have filed suit against them for that. They were already in existing litigation. We all got along for about 4 days at the National at the end of July. And then literally the week after the National, boom, Panini files an antitrust lawsuit against Fanatics, claim that they are taking over a monopoly. So we're literally, that was the first match. And now these are just dominoes beyond that. Now, I didn't think WWE would be a part of it as quick. I was, because WWE, when you look at a market share, has nowhere near the market share, the market reach of the NBA, which is one of the other licenses they have not dropped with yet. So there was a lot of us saying, wow, WWE really is in this now. Like, you know, but it smelt at me like, I think there may be like, this feels a little bit disingenuous on my end, and maybe not necessarily from WWE's end. It to me feels a little disingenuous that there may be some Fanatics kind of back room on this, because Fanatics already has a big hand within WWE in terms of they are basically running their entire merchandise outfit. WWE shop over the past 18 months ish moved to Fanatics, period. It is Fanatics frame. It's the same as any of the other sports now. So they already have a very large hand in terms of the profitability of WWE merch. You know, anything that, you know, that they could put a t-shirt, a belt, any of that stuff now runs through Fanatics. And a side note, and I want to share this because I think you'll find this a little funny-ish, but from a legal end at least. So about 2 weeks ago, they released championship belts. Championship belts are all the rage. We see them in all the sports. You know, it's kind of one of the big tie-ins. We find out who the wrestling fans are when they get their hands on a title belt when they win a championship. Fanatics released a series of NFL championship belts about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was released for all 32 teams. Well, after about 2 hours, one of them got taken down off of Fanatics, and that was the Jacksonville Jaguars belt. Now, to give you the point of reference on this, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars is Shad Khan, billionaire Shad Khan. His son, Tony Khan, who also runs a good chunk of the operations within the Jaguars and Fulham over in the Premier League, Tony's also the owner of WWE's competition, AEW, All Elite Wrestling. So I guess someone got wind of a Jaguars belt going up there, and they were not notified about it. And from basically what I was able to read out, they basically told Fanatics, take it down. We're not authorizing it. Well, I mean, it's why, you know, I from AEW's end, I understand it basically saying, why are we going to allow Fanatics, you know, to put something that's going to put money in our competitor's pocket on our license that we own, you know? So, you know, I think some of this is going to get tied into it, but it smells like Fanatics. I don't want to say collusion. I think that's a bad word. And once again, this is my opinion. Let me disclose this up front. This is all my opinion. When I say things like this, ladies and gentlemen, I have no factual anything to back this up. This is just my opinion. Okay. Full disclaimer. I want to throw that out there right now before we have any other issues. This smells like there's some Fanatics backroom kind of nudging with this. It felt that way with the NFLPA license. You know what I mean? Because all these contracts have roughly between 2 to 3 years left on them. And it seems like Fanatics just doesn't want to wait, you know? And so out of a sudden, out of nowhere, when we're getting regular releases of all of these products to bring it back to WWE, we got select the week of the National. We're set for what should be maybe Elite coming up. I think it's October 15th. We're looking at Immaculate. You know, and we're looking at that. We're starting to get into the high end releases, which we've only had 1 year of them now. So it smells like Fanatics I say collusion because it's the best word I can come up with it. But it this doesn't feel like this is a fully WWE executed move. I know you dug into a lot of the NFLPA situation. Now that you've read the WWE situation from an opinion standpoint, and obviously the courts will settle all this in the end. What is your take on this?
Yeah. So the fact that WWE's filing was under seal doesn't necessarily mean that they're trying to hide stuff from the public. It might be that the contract itself is supposed to be kept under seal. Sales information generally is supposed to be kept under seal. Mm-hmm. So what you might see is WWE just taking out of an abundance of caution, filing what they can under seal. Within their filings, there are some documents that they would like to file redacted versions. So we will be able to see their stories for there. So I think it's more of the pace of media right now. Normally, they'd file a lawsuit, it'd be filed under seal. The next day, you're in front of the judge gets it, and within 24 hours, there's documents that are out there. Mm-hmm. So it's just the fact that, you know, here we are. Instantly, okay, lawsuit was filed at 4 o'clock. We're talking about it at 4:15, and yeah. Here we are. You know, it's 15 hours later. We're like, holy crap! Why don't we know anything more? This is like, you know, what's going on? Excuse me, but so we will get answers to that. As for Panini's allegations, when it came to the NFLPA, I mean, I think there is either through press releases or through something else that Panini was hinting, if not outright saying, that they thought Fanatics had something to do with that. Mm-hmm. But with the WWE complaint, it actually doesn't, as I tweeted out, it doesn't use the F word. It doesn't say Fanatics anywhere in there. So I don't know if that's Panini just getting the basics on file and going forward from there. If they think that this isn't something where there was, potential backroom shenanigans or something mm-hmm. going on. But at least from Panini's complaint, this one looks solely focused on its actions and the WWE's actions. Now, when the lawsuit begins and goes forward, we will get discovery back and forth. I guarantee Panini's going to send a document request saying all communications between WWE and Fanatics, and 14 really poor lawyers are going to look through those million documents or whatever and try and figure it out and find put together a story. So we'll get an answer to that pretty soon. But yeah. I try to focus everything solely on the filings, mm-hmm. and because Panini's filing doesn't mention Fanatics, maybe this is something slightly different than the NFLPA situation, than mm-hmm. The entire antitrust situation, because mm-hmm. Panini did, just give people a little backstory if they don't know it, but Panini had the exclusive licenses for the NFL and for the NBA, mm-hmm. and those are supposed to run through 25, 26, I think. Yep. It's at least still the time on those. And so I always think it's kind of funny where the antitrust lawsuit from Panini is basically saying, it was fine when we had the exclusives, but now that you have the exclusives, no. Now it's a problem. So it'll be interesting to see what the antitrust happens too, because it's not like this is a underdog company trying to make cards and can't make cards. This is the former leader suing the new leader that's out there.
So. Yeah, this is not a novel idea in any way, shape, or form. Panini has definitely been, I would say, one of the leaders. I mean, when we look at it from the hobby end, and we could tie this with wrestling too. I mean, it's basically it. Well, up until Fanatics bought Topps about a year and a half ago, it was Topps, Panini, and Upper Deck, and they basically all had roughly, give or take, an equitable market share. I mean, I don't think necessarily that the WWE license, and I'll say UFC as well, since as of last week, they're now one company, Endeavor, with the ticker symbol TKO, and I think that's probably why they sent the letter kind of quietly and didn't file anything, is because that was all being finished and wrapped up officially last week, to where now, for the first time ever, Vince McMahon, the McMahon family, is not the majority owners of WWE for the first time ever. So I think that's why we didn't see any of the legal filings until this week, is because they didn't want anything or any PR or anything taken away from that good moment. Yeah. With the finalization of the deal with Endeavor. So it felt like that there was an equitable market share out there, with Topps owning the MLB license, Panini kind of having NFL and NBA, and then Upper Deck owning hockey. And regardless of what happens with Fanatics, that's not changing. Fanatics, I I think that's the one license that we've not heard anything about, and probably for good reason, because Upper Deck has that thing on lockdown. And then Upper Deck acquired AEW's license, and we should be in the second year of AEW products, but we've only gotten about four products in a year and a half. But that comes down to some of Upper Deck's logistics issues, supply chain issues. We're still dealing with that from the pandemic. So it felt like there was an equitable market share there, but now Fanatics is basically, they're coming in and they're taking every license. So it's, and we talked about this earlier, and this is where the WWE license, you know, when you look at it from a monetary sense, cause you said it earlier, you know, they have tripled basically the revenue stream for trading cards specifically that they ever got from Topps, and Topps had it for years, for many, many years. And now all of a sudden it goes to Panini and they 3X their revenue. I find it hard to believe. And obviously we've read what the complaints are with it. I find it hard to believe, in my opinion, that WWE has a leg to stand on when they in 18 months have 3X'd the revenue coming in for it, when they're doing nothing different than what Topps did. Panini is exploiting their main products, Prism, Select, Immaculate, Impeccable. You know, they have a just as much of a big brand name recognition as Topps did with Chrome or Transcendent, which is really the product that you saw a lot of the heavy hitter names, Undertaker, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Vince McMahon. Those names have now become more mainstream in products like Select and Panini, and have put it at a price point where it's brought in my opinion, a lot of new collectors. So what is the argument from WWE's end? Is it solely based on the fact that they're claiming they did not exploit the licenses to their satisfaction? Is that the way I'm understanding it with it?
Yeah. And it's one of those things where we have to take it with a grain of salt, because okay, being a lawyer, you know, you're going to advocate the best position for your client as you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one thing that I always look at, I'm a courtroom lawyer. I'm a litigator. I spend most of my time in the courtrooms, and that's what I've done for, you know, 23 years. It's been a while. So, what I always note is when one side doesn't produce the evidence, but only gives you the summary, mm-hmm, it's probably 70-80% right. You know, okay, there's probably some other stuff that's in there. But yes, what Panini says, that, you know, they say that there's only two reasons that this contract, that WWE said they're terminating the contract. It's because apparently no online cards or insufficient online cards, and this whole TCG type area that's going on, which both sides seem, you know, if the timing is wrong, then, you know, there's multiple ways Panini can win. Mm-hmm. If these were objections that needed to be raised earlier,
yeah,
and they didn't raise them in time, well, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, if there's no substance to WWE's objections, well, then the WWE is in trouble. Mm-hmm. So I think Panini's done a very good job of saying, hey, their objections are nonsense. We win because of timing. We win because of subject matter. It'll be interesting to see what the WWE comes back and says. They may say that, you know, yes, you know, we pointed out those two examples, but we also reference, you know, subparagraph 4, paragraph 5, subsection 3 here, where it says, you know, good faith efforts, you know, for everything. And so well, that'll be further developed. And when you only see one side, that's why I always try to pull it back and say, you know, when it comes to who will win, everyone wants to know who will win. I want to see both sides' arguments first, mm-hmm, and before I say who will win, because no matter what, in any case, if they have good lawyers, you look at any of their filings, you're like, they're going to win, you know, because they got $1,500 an hour attorneys on the other side. If they don't write something persuasive, they're not worth $1,500 an hour. So mm-hmm, obviously looking at what Panini's $1,500 an hour lawyers wrote, it looks good. When we look at WWE stuff, it'll look good too. And then we'll just have to figure out what the truth is often somewhere in the middle.
And the devil's in the details, basically. Without exactly, that contract is really going to kind of, I think, spell it out. And if there is any gray area, then obviously we have an ultimate arbiter, basically, in the Southern District of New York, that's basically going to be able to tell us what, you know, what's going on. So because yeah, it's, you know, I've been thinking about this when you brought it up, the concept of digital trading cards is a very a very gray concept, basically, because when you look at it from digital trading cards within the wrestling hobby, and honestly, you could look at it within the sports hobby as a whole, there was that small run for NFTs, but now obviously that has pretty much kind of just fallen away to the wayside, obviously in the wake of FTX and a lot of the other stuff outside of our sports genre, basically. You know, Panini does have Panini Instant, which I've bought a couple of. I've bought some, you know, on my own. I've, you know, tried to go after some John Cena autos with it when they did some stuff like that. Like, it's out there, you know, for them to know. And I think the real laughable thing that someone put up is that not even 2 weeks ago, they were running lower third ads for Panini Select on WWE programming. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how, what, like, you guys are really running these ads, promoting Panini and these products, and you're turning around, and you maybe, depending on date, have already sent them a letter saying that we want out of this contract. Like, it's like one hand, one side of the mouth is not, you know, one side of the head's not speaking to the other in that aspect. I guess the next question is, so we've seen Panini's response, WWE filed under seal, Panini filed their response to it. Are we going to see, or does WWE have to file a response to, well, I think they already did. They filed another lawsuit, correct? Against Panini as the response. Am I understanding that kind of break? Can you break that kind of down? Like, you know, one, two, like our sequence with all of this. So we know what we may be able to expect as we head towards this potential TRO hearing, which may be coming sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And I think the technical term for this is it's a mess. Is really the way
I think that's an understatement, but but you know what? It's wrestling, and wrestling, we love ourselves a hot mess and drama. So this is, you know, this is something that we honestly, if I say this now knowing Vince McMahon doesn't own the company, if there was a way that Vince could make money off of this and put it on television, he probably would have done it. you know, but, you know, it's never going to happen now since Vince doesn't own it, but kind of lay out the sequence of who filed what and when. I think we really haven't talked about that. And then kind of, you know, obviously you mentioned the TRO, but what are we looking at to come short term?
Yeah. So we don't know the, who filed exactly first. Both filings were filed yesterday, and the court, you know, the court system does a very good job of putting, the docket information, including, date of filing, on the documents, but they don't say, time of filing. So we're not exactly sure who got the file, you know, whose case was filed first. And that will be interesting because, there hasn't been a judge assignment yet. There's a chance that they'll get two different judges. And since these cases are so overlapped, one of these judges is going to have to defer the case to the other judge. So that's probably what's fun, amusingly, going to be our first fight is which judge gets to hear these cases. And then that'll probably be solved pretty quickly. But then we go to the TRO, you know, the temporary restraining order that the WWE is seeking. And it wouldn't shock me if Panini filed something similar saying, hey, we need an immediate ruling saying that this contract is still valid also. TROs are difficult. They are difficult to get because basically you are asking a judge to give you some type of remedy, some type of relief without years of discovery, without a jury hearing everything. The judge say, hey, judge, just off the bat, you need to make this decision. So it's a very high bar in order to get a TRO. So there'll be a lot of really quick discovery. We might get a hearing really quickly. It's a contract action, which is good for us because it's not like they're going to need 78 witnesses on both sides to talk about who made what and what happened. It's a contract. It's, you know, you're looking at what does the language say. So that actually helps give us the speed that might be necessary to determine what are the next steps. But so I think first fight, which judge gets it? Next fight is going to be the TROs, maybe, you know, a TRO from WWE, maybe a little bit of mix of both. And I would expect it would not shock me if we got a hearing from that within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something along then, because TROs tend to move pretty quickly. And hopefully we'll be in open court. Hopefully we, you know, I'll make a field trip up to New York and, you know, sit through it and see it. And you're right. You know, this would be something where I think open court, you know, I'm a huge proponent of open courts. I mean, yes. You know, if you're going to use the court system that, you know, taxpayer money pays for, you have to fight it out in public. Otherwise, go arbitrate it and, you know, do what so right now, Panini and the NFLPA are in a similar fight, but they're arbitrating it. So that means it's before a, you know, privately hired judge. And it's going on in secret, and we're not going to know anything that's going on. Mm-hmm. And they're paying that guy a lot of money in order to rule on that case. Here, the judge's salaries and pretty much everything are paid by our tax money. So if you're going to use our tax money to have the fight, let's get it all out there and we all get to see it. Otherwise, you should have drafted your contracts better and had an arbitration and let it go in secret.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but everything, once you get into, and I know this from following other endeavors outside of the hobby, and I won't even mention, it's not worth the time or the breath to do so, but things within the federal court are not exactly open in terms of the ability to be able to watch or view in real time. Am I correct in that aspect?
They should be open. Unless the other side, and one of the first filings we'll see here is both sides will want a protective order, meaning that, hey, we're going to talk about trade secrets. So some of these documents will need to be filed under seal, and sometimes the courtroom will need to be sealed. But that's not the default rule. The default rule is open courts, open documents. You can view everything. Now, judges, sometimes when it comes to trade, you know, potential trade secrets, which, you know, sales information is a huge, you know, information you'd want your competitor to know.
Yep.
The judge may allow some things to be sealed. Okay. And judges are getting better at only sealing certain aspects.
Okay.
So if we get a good judge that decides, hey, sure, trade secret information, you know, all that stuff, that's sealed. But 7 hours of this 12-hour hearing are going to be open to the public.
Okay.
All these filings, except for these little paragraphs here, are going to be open to the public.
Does that mean also from like a, I mean, I guess maybe the, I didn't delineate best, but like we're seeing in other avenues of the legal world right now for other things, live streaming of basically whether it's hearings or potential trials and things of that nature. If that does come to that, or I guess not if, when, you know, the attorneys for Panini and Jerry McDivitt and the WWE attorneys, if that's who it is, I'm assuming since this was a contract drafted prior to the Endeavor buyout, it would still be WWE's attorneys. So Jerry McDivitt being the lead attorney with this, when they end up having to go to whether it's Manhattan, I think is where the Southern District of New York is for federal courts. When they end up heading down that way, are we going to be able to, if, for those of us who want to, for those of us who are crazy enough to actually try to find it, are we going to be able to watch these proceedings outside of just being able to look at the filings when the filings become public within the federal court system?
There is more of a push to get some court hearings and trials online, but that's more of a push. It's not the standard rule.
Okay.
If the parties want that, they're going to have to ask for it and move for it, or the media will have to file its motions to get there. But regardless, if you're in Manhattan and the trial starts that day, you can walk into the courtroom and provided that there's seats, you can sit there and watch it. And only if the court wants to seal certain proceedings, you can see as much of it as you want.
If I had the time and the money to be able to, I mean, I could get a direct flight from where we are. I mean, Delta's direct into LaGuardia and United's direct into Newark. You know, I've done those flights a million times back in the Evolve days. You know, that would almost be worth it for a field trip because this is not something that us within the wrestling hobby, we've never experienced this. You know, when it comes to a legal aspect, we've had concussions, obviously it's been a big thing and that, but that goes over all sports in terms of that over the years and the issue with MLW. But outside of that, there's been some lawsuits here and there for whatever. But I think this is one of the real first, one of the bigger lawsuit issues. The concussion one was a big thing in terms of it was at the very forefront of it when other sports were starting to delve into it. But prior to that, I mean, I think back of WCW and WWE about intellectual property, you know, in the 90s with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, you know, and that sort of thing during the Monday Night Wars. That was probably the biggest, you know, that. And then maybe a few years before that was Vince McMahon with the federal trial, the steroid trial. in the early 90s was probably the biggest, kind of lawsuit within the wrestling industry. So we don't get big things like this. And maybe it's just because I'm on X and, their algorithm populates a lot of it. But I also look at it in the spect of that guys like Darren Revelle were reporting on this. I think Darren Revelle was the one to break it yesterday. Yep. WWE, especially in the past few years, has gone very much more into the mainstream. So I think this may be one of the bigger kind of legal fights that we've seen probably since the 90s, just based on the fact that WWE as an entity, as in as a property now, is more mainstream than ever. It just announced this morning that they SmackDown's going to be going to USA, I think, next year on a new TV rights deal, which means Raw may be moving somewhere else. But I think they got $400 million just for the rights to SmackDown. Like, we're seeing money in that aspect for these brands that we've never seen before. So the fact that we're this levels being raised in terms of visibility with it, I think makes things like this more visible. But in the grand scheme of things, and you've seen, I mean, we talked about, the other lawsuits that have come down. I mean, what we've got the issue with I'll say it just to be for PG sake, the adult theme cards that we had, we talked about that we both have seen. I've followed that. There was the issue with the 86 Fleer Jordans, if I'm not mistaken. That's been a recent one. When you look at the recent litigations that have come down, and obviously antitrust is its own animal. Where do you see this kind of stack up against some of the other notable hobby litigations?
I think, the big litigation that's out there is the Panini versus Fanatics antitrust action. Yeah. And that spawned, there's two other lawsuits. There's Panini sued Fanatics also for allegedly stealing 36 other employees.
Yeah.
And then Fanatics sued Panini for unfair competition for various other reasons too. And then, if you look at that as, the antitrust as the, biggest lawsuit that's out there, this is kind of another tentacle of that lawsuit, because the NFLPA, that arbitration/lawsuit that's going on, that has to do with Fanatics ultimately getting the rights. Here we suspect Fanatics is going to get the rights from WWE also. So I'd say that, it's actually all part of the giant octopus that is the antitrust lawsuit. Really can't, while they are, distinct issues, it's very hard to separate them all because they are all connected. It's really it's the tale of, Panini being on top and starting to lose its luster, and Fanatics coming up and grabbing up all the licenses from everybody, including Panini.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of there's been some discontent within the hobby, but I mean, this wasn't necessarily a pandemic or post-pandemic thing. And this is going to lead into one of the questions, probably one of the most frequently asked questions I've been asked in the past 18 hours with this. A lot of people complain about redemptions, and the situation surrounding that. Leaf actually, I think, was one of the first companies earlier, I think it was this year or late last year, filed a lawsuit against CeeDee Lamb.
Yep.
For not signing his redemptions. And literally as soon as they filed suit and it was public, I think it was he had him back to him in 48 hours. Like it was wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
That was within 7 days of the lawsuit being filed that not only did Leaf have the signed autographs, they were in the mail. It was 7 days from beginning to end. It was beautiful.
And there was,
but Panini's, Panini has, there's a lawsuit against Panini for redemptions right now. It's it's supposed to go to trial next year. And that's kind of, Fanatics has been pounding that in the antitrust and other cases, basically saying, hey, part of the problem that Panini had is it got really lax when it came to redemptions. And the Panini redemption case shows that at some point it was up to like 20% or 25% of a couple of years were redemptions of the autographs were all redemptions. And so, part of it was just like, hey, they got up there, they got complacent, they let things slide, and that's how we were able to come in. So it's just pure competition. Once you saw all those redemptions that are out there, the leagues that are out there, WWE that's out there, they have a right to choose who wants to make their cards, and the redemptions really hurt Panini. So
I
other things that are alleged there too.
Fairness, we can go into the redemptions. Topps Fanatics is not any better about it. Like people are, and then this is recent and wrestling related. Fanatics is in the past couple of weeks just sending out redemptions that are 3+ years old from Topps products prior to Panini coming over. And they're not even, people are not even getting the redemptions that they had actually redeemed. Majority of them are all getting substitutions because they were not able to fulfill those. So I find that a hard, I find that as a very hard argument, knowing what we're seeing with that. And that's not something that's a wrestling specific thing. That's across all sports, you know, and, you know, in the wrestling world where there's a couple of issues, and this is my, you know, the question I have for you, and I'll preface it with this. I know there's some people that have asked. We unfortunately lost Wyndham Rotunda, aka Bray Wyatt, a couple of weeks ago. We're still waiting to hear from Panini on, because he had some outstanding redemptions. Most recent is Select, had some autos in there. It's a whole nother animal in its own right. You know, and we're all still kind of sad about that. But from to tie it into the redemption standpoint, the question we're getting asked full stop is, what is going to happen to people that have outstanding redemptions? I can tell you personally, I have like 9 redemptions out at Panini right now for stuff. You know, and I've gotten some stuff back. There was one that shipped earlier in the week for me. That was a Select thing. Like, you know, Topps waited. I haven't waited a year for anything. Topps, you know, I waited a year for an Ellie De La Cruz Reds auto. But I guess the question is, and maybe you can kind of shed some light on this, at least from a legal standpoint, like for, let's say hypothetical, and obviously this is going to be, I think, and you can agree on this, a long and drawn out, it's going to be a protracted process basically. But from a redemption standpoint, for people that either have redemptions that have already been redeemed that are in Panini systems as tickets, or if someone was to pull a redemption that is still that is a non-expired, and I need to preface that, non-expired redemption, because if it's expired, there's no guarantees for anything at that point if it's expired. But for those people that either pull a redemption that is yet to expire out of, because anything that's been within the past 18 months or any Panini WWE product, as of recording, as of us speaking right now, any redemption is still live and good and is non-expired, so can be redeemed. What's going to happen, you know, or potentially happen with those redemptions?
This is going to be, it's going to be interesting, because when the NFLPA, to go back to the NFLPA situation, because that's similar and we get a little bit of guidance there. The NFLPA, issued a document to agents and everybody else saying, hey, we're switching from Panini. We're going to Fanatics. But in there, they also said in there that if anybody, if any athlete has contracts, you know, contracts, you know, we expect any athlete to fulfill any contracts or obligations that they already have. So, you know, in that instance, it appears that the contract between the NFLPA and Panini has some type of, okay, anything where they're for older product, the redemptions are out there, maybe you can still get autographs that are out there. Now, that's a little bit of a different situation, because for NFL products, you have the NFL license and the NFLPA license. And then you also have players have their own licenses in some instances, mm-hmm. with Panini themselves. Mm-hmm. So in something like that, you could see there's layers of which redemptions would actually get filled.
Yeah.
Here, we don't know about what type of relationship there is between the WWE, according to the license, and the individuals themselves. Does the contract say, hey, in case of termination, any redemptions that are outstanding, you can still fulfill those. You just can't release new product. Or does the contract say, no, this is terminated. You cannot even interact with any WWE entertainers from here on out. It'll really depend on the contract. But I would think Panini's lawyers would probably have something similar to what's in the NFLPA contract to the WWE contract, meaning that I would guess that if there are redemptions that are already out there, Panini can go back and try and push to get those redemptions, those outstanding redemptions that are signed. For new product, or while this battle goes on, all bets are off for that, because you don't know. I mean, yes, the parties are going to seek early rulings from the judge, but the most likely ruling from the judge is, hey, I need more time.
Yeah,
I can't make a decision at this point. So you keep making product and we'll keep fighting stuff out. And that's probably the worst for both sides. All three sides with Fanatics too.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, if you're making product, if you're not getting signatures, do you push that? If you're Panini, do you sue people? Do you just put the redemptions in? And then, you know, if you lose a contract and it goes to Fanatics, what happens there? Or if it goes to Fanatics and then Panini ultimately wins, I mean, it's that's such a mess. But I would think older redemptions, most likely, I wouldn't panic just yet. Unless something crazy happens at a TRO hearing or during this, I think when it comes to redemptions that were already released, I think there's probably some time frame when Panini can go and get the entertainers to fulfill those redemptions.
Yeah, I think the good news with WWE is that it's a little more cut and dry, I would think. And I say this having experienced the fact, I mean, I was for, you know, 2 years of contracted talent to Impact Wrestling. I actually had a legal agreement. It was basically a pandemic contract, January 1, 2020. And it expired at the end of, at the end of 2021. And it was a 2-year deal. And I mean, I had an attorney, I had a friend of mine who's an attorney. I hired him and I read through that thing. So that way I knew what I was getting into. And fortunately, a lot of what was not in my contract, because I'm a referee, was a lot of IP, a lot of intellectual property stuff, but I still had to read. There were still some things I needed to read in case something happened. Like I needed to know what I was getting myself into. I think the best thing with this is it's a little more cut and dry from WWE in terms of the fact that a lot of these names for people, so like Bray Wyatt, Diesel, Shawn Michaels, those are all WWE owned intellectual property. So I think it should be a little more cut and dry, I would hope, from the redemption standpoint, since it's not, you're not dealing with an individual talent. You're dealing, you know, WWE can basically say, hey, you need to sign these, you know, because it, WWE owns the IP to it. It may get a little different. I know that there are some talent who are legends, basically, that are no longer with the company that have signed their own deals with Panini. So I'm assuming that would be something set aside from that. You know what I mean? Granted, it's under the WWE license in terms of, you know, they're under these licensed products, but they actually went out, Panini did, and negotiated these deals to get these talent brought in as a part of these card sets. So it's a little more cut and dry because it's IP that's owned by WWE. At the end of the day, it's not like you're dealing with individual players like the CeeDee Lamb situation. You know, I think WWE can always step in and say, hey, you have to sign these, you know what I mean? And I think that if, especially if we're going to get into a protracted legal battle here, that, you know, WWE would be try to stay on as much on the legal straight and narrow, shall we say. The end of your question kind of leads into to my last question with this is, could we be going into basically a blackout period of no wrestling trading cards under the WWE license? Because I've said this a couple of people last night. I think I may have said this to you earlier. If I'm Panini, I'm not doing anything that could be conceived as an additional breach of contract. So if I'm not going to honor that letter from WWE, which obviously this says that if they completely and wholeheartedly disagree with it, then technically to them, they still own the license to be able to make cards. Why would I stop making cards and to actually give them a legitimate, what, you know, at least Panini would consider a legitimate breach of contract issue? But we have a TRO on the table, like you said. You know, we could know in a couple of weeks with it. If things shake out the wrong way, I guess, basically, from the collector standpoint, could we just go into an absolute blackout for an indefinite period of time where we get no WWE cards at all?
Yeah, I think right now, if you consider that Panini has known for 2 weeks the termination occurred, and we don't know if there's some type of, if was this an immediate termination, was there, you can get rid of any inventory that's on hand, because, you know, they have Donruss Elite is going to be released, and I think it was supposed to be released in October, and I think, yep, it recently got bumped to November. And okay, I think it may have gotten bumped probably because of these lawsuits that are going on right now. So I think with that, I think Panini probably is going forward with that product, thinking it's going to win the lawsuit or something's going to happen, or there'll be a ruling rather quickly. You always think that, you know, when before I became a lawyer, I always thought, you know, whenever you get a ruling, you know who won, you know who lost. Unfortunately, lots of rulings are mixed bags.
Yeah.
So here, the worst thing that could happen is the court, if the court denies the TRO or says that the contract's still going, that's great. Panini knows I can continue to make products. We can go forward there.
Yep.
Now, if there's some mixed bag ruling where, well, it works for this, but not for this, then, you know, Panini doesn't want to be held in violation or held in contempt of court, because that's something with the TRO here. excuse me, if the judge rules at all that Panini can't do certain things, if Panini violates the TRO, it's not just money damages. I mean, it's potentially held in contempt of court.
Yeah.
And you get a lot more potential issues that could be there. So depending on how that judge rules, you could see a blackout period, because yes, Fanatics is supposed to be ramping up, and you know, potentially Fanatics is going to get this and they'll start ramping stuff up. Well, they can't just turn on the press in 2 days. I mean, yeah, it takes a while to create a product and get it going.
Yeah.
But also, if there's a mixed bag ruling, if the judge says, okay, I don't think there's enough for a TRO, but there's definitely something here, let's have a trial in a year. You know, if that happens, that's the worst for everybody, because Panini will still keep probably going forward with their product, knowing that the plug can get pulled within a year. Fanatics, while it wants to ramp up, it's in danger of, you know, not being able ramping up and not being able to make a product.
Yeah.
So this is a big long way of saying it will depend on how the judge rules on the TRO. If it's a difficult ruling, if the judge says, hey, Panini, you messed up, it goes to Fanatics, well, then you'll get product. It'll take a little bit, but you'll get product. And maybe the judge will be like, you know what? You've already got quite a bit of Donruss Elite already printed. You can release that one product.
Yeah.
So we could get that certainty there. Or flip side, it could say, hey, WWE, there's no basis for what you're saying. Panini, continue like nothing's changed. That would be the best thing ever, and we wouldn't have a blackout. But if there is some mixed bag ruling that's out there, it could be a rough time for WWE cards.
Yeah, and as collectors, it could be an absolute rough time, and it could absolutely change the landscape in terms of valuations too, because we only got one, and I look at it in this aspect, we got 2 years of Prism and 2 years of Select. Those are basically the one and two products. But from the higher end stuff, Immaculate and Impeccable, we only got 1 year of it. So the thought of, from a market standpoint, of having 1 year of those high end products is just, you know, it's going to, my opinion, it's going to drive prices through the roof basically on anything, because we were all expecting 3 to 4 years of this. And now we got 18 months, you know, with it. And, you know, it's like scarcity already kicks in. So the worst thing that could happen, I think, is that we get into a point where we get into this blackout, because I think it could potentially reverse any forward momentum that we have, that the hobby, at least the wrestling part of the hobby, has basically put forward, because now you're looking at no products. Scarcity, wild scarcity is with immediate effect, because we have a limited supply of the past 18 months worth of products, and then a even more limited supply of what's left out there of the top stuff from the prior license with Tops, which it was not printed to the scale of any of the other sports. So if you can find it, you know, it's out there, but everything's just going to go potentially go price parabolic. So this is a mess in summation. So I know you will update everything with it as on your social media platforms. Is there anywhere else outside of X that you have anybody you to check you out on?
I'm pretty much, you know, I'm a little bit on everywhere else in case Twitter X falls apart, but really that's where I live. So any updates I have, I'm on there as quickly as possible to update it. So, and I keep checking out the website. I'm hoping the judge showed up at 9 a.m. today and said, you know what? Okay. All the under seal stuff, we'll get that under seal, but you have redacted stuff. We're making that all public. And as soon as that's up there, I'm just going to, you know, get a big old, you know, glass of water and, you know, type it all up.
And I will make sure, and maybe if we have the time, the chance, I'd love to have you back on it as we move through this, maybe just for some updates, you know, I don't want to say sporadically, but when we get a kind of big tranche or big delve in, you know what I mean? Have you back on and kind of lay out where we go from here, because I think for a lot of either returning or new, for all of us within the wrestling hobby, this is really uncharted territory for us, you know? And so I think that, you know, a lot of us are going to be learning a lot of new, you know, for those who don't look into the other sports, this is, we're going to be learning a lot of new stuff about this as we go through this. You know, so, Paul, I appreciate you taking the time with me. Thank you so much for breaking it down and answering the questions with it and kind of laying the groundwork basically for, what is going to be, Panini versus WWE. We've booked it. It's booked in the Southern District of New York. And, you know, from the referee end, we got the zebra. Well, we don't have a zebra yet, at least at the time of recording. We don't have a zebra. That's going to be officiating the whole thing. We will soon. But thank you for coming on and explaining this. This is, as we said at the outset, basically one huge dumpster fire of a situation. But it definitely is going to impact, I think, the broader issues that are out, even outside of the wrestling. Like you said, this is going to affect as we go into the antitrust lawsuit with Panini and Fanatics. This, you know, anything that happens with any of these sports licenses now, I think is going to affect the overall landscape, because it basically all leads into that Fanatics, Panini antitrust. Everything else is a byproduct, but these are going to get solved, I think, before we get that solved, unless we get governmental overreach from the FTC beforehand, which is not out of the question either. And that, but that's a whole nother ball game. So thank you for coming on. I appreciate it, guys. Check out Paul_Lesko on X. Check me out at Ref Brandon Toll on Twitter, at Top of the Card. If you guys have any questions, you know, when we have Paul back on down the road as this whole situation unfolds, we'll bring the questions out to you for this. And that'll do it, guys, for a very special legal episode of Top of the Card right here on the Head Free Shows platform, guys. I will see you guys on the next one, round and third, and heading for home. We'll see you on the next one, everybody.